We are back with more of Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Many of us made pledges or resolutions to exercise or eat healthier in the new year, and many of us, in this building anyway, were confronted with the nachos for sale in the lobby at lunchtime yesterday. It's not unusual for these kinds of resolutions to go by the wayside in the first weeks of the new year, but why is that, and how can we make better plans?
For this month's Fit for You, Audrey Nowakowski spoke with Becky Kirkenbush, a clinical dietitian in the Milwaukee area. Kirkenbush explains that people often set lofty but unrealistic goals, but there are ways to do better by yourself.
When it comes to nutrition, after the first of the year, people are very motivated. They often make grand changes and expect great results in a short amount of time. And unfortunately, that doesn't happen. So we see resolutions tend to fade away within 4 to 6 weeks after the new year.
Do you think that typical approach of making a grand sweeping change and wanting to get these results or changes quick is part of why it fails?
Correct. I do. I think that people go into these diets expecting a tremendous amount of weight loss with perhaps little effort or no activity in addition to nutrition changes. They don't have a support system. So without the prior preparation and putting some thought into it, the resolution can easily fail.
Right. And based on what you've observed, either through, you know, media trends that we all can see are accessible or through your work, what are some of the top fad or popular diets you've come across this past year? You know, when I think of things, I'm thinking like the ketogenic diet, keto, paleo, gluten-free.
Correct. So what I've seen that doesn't tend to work long-term would, I think, number one, the past year has been the keto diet, a very high-fat diet, very low carbohydrate, low protein. I think the low-carbohydrate diet is still popular as well, low-carb, high-protein. Those would be the main two. And then, like you had mentioned, gluten-free is still a popular approach. And I see people that do not have celiac disease and are not gluten sensitive or have a gluten allergy follow this diet. And it mainly, for them, it's because it cuts out a lot of food, which reduces their calorie intake. And that's where the weight loss stems from.
Right. So when it comes to the keto diet, what makes that unsustainable in the long run?
So it's usually unsustainable because it heavily restricts carbohydrates, which our brain and our muscles do need to function properly. Very high fats, and if you don't choose the healthier fats and you're focused just on, let's say, I can have bacon as much as I want, anytime I want, after a while that does set into food fatigue, where if you're only eating a set 10 foods, that can get a little boring or tiring. And then you're cutting out foods that you might really enjoy, and the temptation there can set you up for failure.
Right. And when it comes to keto, you know, I see people doing calorie charts, making their grocery lists, like you mentioned before, like extreme shifts in their habits and behavior. And going into something like this without the support system seems very, you know, overwhelming as well. Do you think that these kind of fad diets take advantage of such drastic change that people think it's going to make them more successful if there's more work into it?
Correct. I think with the fad diet, what happens is they take advantage of providing you the meal plan, providing you all these black and white guidelines, which at first people really want and are successful with. But then there's no long-term maintenance education. There's no long-term management or guidance. You know, what do I do when I have a setback? Is this the correct diet for me in the first place? You know, diets should be very individualized for the person, and that's what a registered dietitian can do, is to take a look at a person's past medical history, their current lifestyle, what they tolerate and can't tolerate in their diet, and then they kind of set up a meal plan based on that. One size does not fit all, and that's also why some of these fad diets fail.
So what do you think is a more sustainable way that we can approach changing our diets? You mentioned that people often don't have a support system. So what steps should be taken before, you know, you cook that first meal of a new way of living?
Sure. If you have the opportunity, I would try to reach out to a registered dietitian. Many hospitals or outpatient clinics have that resource available. We are the experts for nutrition. And also take advantage of any, if there are any nutrition-related or cooking classes. Oftentimes, success starts with, are you able to make your food at home? You know, the better you are at food preparation, meal planning and then actually cooking, the more success you'll have. But I seem to find that if you tell your family, look, this is a healthy way of eating, this is not just a diet for myself, and diet has rather a negative connotation to it. So we like to say, this is a way of living. So an overall lifestyle change, that has a better approach and long-term result.
Do you think in the age of the internet and with so much information at our fingertips, this has been a big disadvantage for, you know, the dietitian community nutrition-wise, because there's so much information overload that a novice is going to go out and perhaps get the wrong information?
I do. I think you have to be very careful with the news that is out there. You know, not everyone is in it for, you know, the well-being of the other person. There are obviously these diets are created to make money, to sell books, to sell products. So everyone's personal story about why this diet worked and that diet worked for me. But again, we all have individual needs, and it's much, much bigger than just what you are eating. It's stress. It's emotions. It's who is your support around you? Do you work? Do you work too much? So all of those are factors into how successful your meal plan will be.
So what kind of meal plan would you suggest for someone, granted they don't have any medical restrictions for food groups? What's a type of, you know, diet is having this connotation with us that perhaps
sure.
isn't the right way, but what's a good protocol to follow, I should say, rather?
So the Mediterranean diet is still one of the best meal plans there are out there. And I say meal plans because it also stresses enjoying real whole foods, maintaining an active lifestyle, enjoying meals with family and friends, and just taking time to eat without all of the outside distractions and stimulation that I think we've become accustomed to. So it's really enjoying your meals.
Which I think is an important part because, especially in American culture, so much social life revolves around food.
Correct. We eat if we're happy. We eat if we're sad. We have potlucks at work. Every celebration, there's a dessert of some sort. So, and that's okay to celebrate and to enjoy our food, but oftentimes we do it just too often and in too big a portion.
Now, when it comes to finding the right foods for Mediterranean diet, I imagine by default, this is straying away from the overly processed foods we're finding on our market shelves.
Right, correct. Mediterranean diet is eating primarily plant-based foods, but you don't have to be a vegetarian. It's just they focus on whole foods like fruit, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, and nuts. You're replacing the saturated fats such as butter with healthy fats like olive oil and canola oil. You're reducing your use of salt. You're flavoring with foods like herbs and spices instead. You may have red meat, but they really suggest having it no more than a few times a month. So maybe you're reducing your red meat to once a week. Eating fish and poultry twice a week as a substitution, perhaps, for the red meat. Enjoying meals with family and friends. You have that conversation that slows you down, so you're not eating. You're not in front of the TV eating mindlessly when we tend to eat too much. And then getting plenty of exercise, because activity is important. And people think, well, I'm not going to go out and run 2 miles. But what they're talking about with exercise or activity is just being active every single day.
And do you have a suggestions for how many minutes or what kinds of activities, say someone who is stuck in an office setting on a very snowy day like today, where perhaps we're limited into what we can do?
Sure. So they do, there's a general recommendation of 30 to 60 minutes a day of activity, and that doesn't have to be all at one time. That can be broken up throughout the day. Like you said, if you're in an office, let's say you're sitting at your desk at a computer, you can set a reminder or an alert. Every 15 minutes, you need to get up, go get a drink of water. You know, hydration is also important for health. Skip the soda, the sugary coffee, and the energy drinks in favor of water. And you can certainly flavor that water to make it more interesting. You can also increase activity by, if you have a large building, you can go do some stairs. You can take an extra walk during your lunch hour. So there are lots of ways to increase activity. I think it's just we get into a rut and we just get so focused on work that we don't take the breaks that we are entitled to.
Right. And when it comes to that downtime from work, with work being stressful, if we're in a situation such as that, I think it makes our downtime perhaps even more exacerbated. But one thing that is always preached that I admit I need to work on is the factor of getting enough sleep. What does sleep do for our bodies?
Sleep is really important. If you don't get the proper amount of sleep, so the time of sleep, and then the proper quality of sleep, it really disrupts certain hormones that we use for our metabolism. And so without the sleep, we wake up tired. We rely then on caffeine. We then maybe need the afternoon sugar to keep us awake. So we make poor choices that then also include poor food choices. We also don't have the energy then to exercise if we're that tired from not sleeping well. So it really does go hand in hand. Good sleep, good nutrition, good activity really creates that healthy lifestyle.
What are some healthy habits we can start that will ideally become a daily part of someone's life? Say they're not ready to go out and buy new groceries strictly for the Mediterranean diet. What are some small few steps they can take to work towards that?
Sure. And I say having one goal or one new habit, do that for a couple weeks. Let that become more natural to you and then add on to that. Don't overhaul everything at once. So the first thing I tell people is, try to have a breakfast in the morning. Breakfast is literally breaking the fast from when you're sleeping. So like a car does not run well when it's on empty, our body also does not run well when it hasn't had food. So eating something within to a half hour or an hour of waking up is important. Also, I would say avoiding extreme hunger. So using a hunger scale where 0 would be extreme hunger, 9 to 10 would be uncomfortably stuffed or full. You want to eat before you're extremely hungry and then stop when you're satisfied at about a 5 or a 6. So that's what we call being really mindful of eating. Other healthy habits would be not skipping a meal, because when we skip a meal, it tends to lead us to overeat at the next meal or make very poor food choices because we're so hungry by that time.
What do you think needs to change in, I mean, we'll limit it to American culture for now, but what needs to change to make these goals a more sustainable and healthy way of attaining a new lifestyle? I mean, you know, we go on vacation, we experience the way other countries live, their active lifestyle, like you mentioned, the Mediterranean diet, walking, eating, making food, spending time with family. But it seems like in America, they're counting on making money every single new year based on these diets and these resolutions and the whole gym membership scheme. You know, what needs to change? Is it individuals or is it the way corporations are marketing health?
I think it's the combination of everything. I think the American culture is I want it now, and I want it fast, and I want big amounts of it. I want my money's worth. So I think the consumer is certainly having a part of that and driving what is provided to us by the manufacturers and the companies. I think that people need to educate themselves on what works and what does not work. There is no magic pill that helps us lose all this weight, and there is no magic diet that is perfect for every person. So, and I think the other thing is looking and understanding, you know, what's in the foods that we are purchasing, reading the food label. They redone the food labels to make them easier to read. So knowing what is in your food. Also, learning how to cook. And it doesn't have to be big, extravagant meals. Just learning how to prepare meals at home more so we're not inclined to going through the drive-thru. Also, setting priorities. Is nutrition and healthy eating for your family important? It should be, but is it what you're giving the time to that it deserves? So taking a Sunday to make sure you buy the proper groceries, to go home, plan the meals or the snacks ahead of time for the week. And it seems like a daunting task, but there is a lot of great information out there on how to do that so you are successful and that you maintain it. Getting your kids involved so that they know what healthy eating should be. Unfortunately, we're raising children that maybe don't know how to cook. They don't know how to read a food label. They think that 20 ounces of soda is normal and something that they should be drinking every day. So I think it does start certainly with parents and families, but then it does, the education needs to be there, and the companies certainly have an obligation or responsibility to also have some transparency and to let you know what is in their food, how it's prepared, how it's manufactured, things like that.
Well, Becky, hopefully with the expanded options and with some of the tools you mentioned today, some people can, if anything, restart their resolutions because it's not just for January, right?
Correct. And, you know, if I always tell people it's not one meal that makes or breaks you, but it's what you do repeatedly over time. So even if you feel like you want to give up, just start the next day, try it again and again.
All right. Well, Becky Kirkenbush, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Becky Kirkenbush is a clinical dietitian, an advanced practice board certified specialist in gerontological nutrition, and a fellow of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. She spoke with Lake Effect Audrey Nowakowski for this month's Fit for You segment, and you can listen to our past segments at WUWM.com.